And that lies at the very center of what I have to tell you now. Jean-Luc Picard is back.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
Hello, ladies! It's Tyler Orton.
And we have a very special guest, currently busking to get himself home after spending all his money in the vendor's room, Scott Hardy.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm currently playing covers of Oasis in the lobby. If you'd like to give me a tip, I can maybe get home.
Oh, very nice. Now, we are in Las Vegas to talk about the wrap-up to Creation's Star Trek Convention 2018. Quiet year. No real news came out of this one, right, Tyler?
No, but you know what? Let's kick it off. I think it's what everybody's expecting to hear about, but it's Patrick Stewart made a surprise appearance during the convention, and Alex Kurtzman, executive producer of Star Trek Discovery, the both of them were there to confirm that one P. Stew is coming back to reprise his role as Captain Picard. But is it really Captain? I mean, he was a little bit, I don't know, unclear about what the role is really going to entail.
Right.
You know, Patrick Stewart said maybe he won't even be a captain anymore, but the events of the last 20 years, they are really going to influence, I guess, how Picard approaches life now. But I just want to know, Scott, what was your initial reaction to what was going on? Because it was a pretty surreal moment for the convention.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of set it up, we had notifications during the day that there was going to be a special announcement after the Bill Shatner panel, if I'm correct.
Right, yeah.
And Alex Kurtzman came out onto stage and spoke about the new project coming up. And he thought, I'm not the best person to speak about it. Opens the door, and there's Sir Patrick Stewart.
I don't know if it's even possible to convey the feeling in that room at that time, because I'm sure everyone's seen video clips at this point or read the news story, seen Patrick Stewart's own statement on returning to Picard. But being in that room when he walked out, it was electric. Now, I am such a loser because, you know, just a couple episodes ago in our Picard spinoff episode, I was a little bit hedging my bets and kind of a little bit of a negative Nancy, I think, a bit. And I was like up on my feet roaring. It was shameless.
Oh, believe me, Cam, I made fun of you relentlessly for being so, I guess, so-so on the whole idea of a Captain Picard spinoff. But as soon as Patrick Stewart took to the stage, it was like the Beatles and you were kind of in the Ed Sullivan audience or something, Cam.
Yeah, yeah. And then even more so when he just said, Jean-Luc Picard is back.
And that's very interesting. He said Jean-Luc Picard is back.
He did.
He never said Captain Picard is back.
Right.
So I think this, the way you were pitching it, Cam, is that maybe a Captain Picard spinoff would be him shepherding a new crew.
Right.
I don't get the sense that that is necessarily what it's going to be. I also wonder, you know, there are question marks about, is this going to be a limited series? Is it going to be, you know, an ongoing series? I'm leaning more towards limited series. But, you know, we discussed it quite a bit about our own thoughts about the possibility, Cam. I'm curious, Scott, what do you think about the potential of a Picard spinoff series for Star Trek?
Well, I mean, first of all, excited is the word I'd use about it. The potential, the possibilities are endless. They didn't really tell us much about what's happening. But what I'd like to see is, you know, how he's dealt with all the things he's dealt with we've seen so far, being assimilated by the Borg, all the films, you know, dealing with his own clone and nemesis at the end. They must have affected him. And he spent years as a captain in Starfleet. What does that do to a person?
The only thing that I do worry about, though, is I think one of the most redeemable things about Star Trek Generations is the advice that Kirk gives to Picard at the end.
Right.
Which is never let them take the ship away from you.
If you actually listen to our Captain Picard episode, there's a clip of that right at the start of it.
Yeah, so. And it makes me... That's the one concern that I do have, because I really do feel as if Picard would have taken that to heart.
Right.
And that's why I would still like to see him be a captain of a starship.
Well, like, Admiral Picard doesn't sound the most interesting.
No. Nor does maybe Ambassador Picard.
Right.
Or Commandant of the Starfleet Academy.
Right.
So we'll see how it goes. I think we're all excited for it.
But... And we should say, like, this is an idea apparently that Kirsten Beyer has dreamed up. And, yeah, Kiva Goldsman and whole writing team, Michael Chabon, Alex Kurtzman, are all going to see this thing to fruition. I mean, Patrick Stewart said on stage he did not want to do this show. Like, he was prepared to walk in and say no. And the idea they had was so good that it made him realize that he wanted to do this and that the world needs, you know, that kind of TNG spirit, at least, to kind of help give it a little bit of hope and optimism. And I think it's really interesting that he was so won over by their pitch because, I mean, Patrick Stewart could have easily done Picard in the past. I'm sure they would have happily let him do it. But the fact that he was won over by them at least gives me hope that they have an idea that is original and interesting to him.
Yeah, I don't feel this is so cynical as maybe I would have just a few weeks ago.
Right.
Where the fact that Patrick Stewart legitimately is interested in it after saying, and he was being completely sincere, at least I feel, to the audience when he's saying that he was determined never to do Captain Picard again.
I like was just terrified of the idea of essentially like the Orville with Picard as your captain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where you're kind of like, well, it's like TNG, but not.
So I think maybe that's, as much as I was being resistant to the idea that he's no longer captain, I do like the idea that they are pushing the character forward, putting him, it seems as if they'll be putting him in a new situation. But Scott, I mean, the fact that they don't have any scripts ready, there's just a few ideas for stories. Are you concerned about how long it's going to take before we actually see this show?
I'm a big fan of taking their time. I'm happy for them to stew on it for a while.
Patrick stew on it?
Yeah, you got it. And really just help and craft this story for him, because they've done the impossible of getting Patrick Stewart back in Star Trek. Let's take the time, let's build it, let's make it properly and not have all these, you know, exec producers coming in and out like we've had on Discovery.
And I like that he said it's going to be very, very different than what we'd seen before, because, you know, in our Captain Picard spinoff episode, we were talking a lot of like, well, which crew members are coming by for this one, where it's kind of like the reunion journey.
We were even talking about how, like, set design-wise, if it's on the Enterprise F, they'll probably have that kind of horseshoe shape for the bridge.
Right.
And it's like, because they know that the fans will want to see that.
Right.
That's why I was worried this was more of a cynical move, but I think Patrick Stewart did a lot to allay those concerns that a lot of us had.
The fact that he promised it would be very, very different was, I think, good for a couple reasons. One, people like me, it said, look, what you're going to get is not just an attempt to mine the same material again. But B, it told people in the room to not expect what they'd seen before. Because I think that's a lot of the problem is they announced Captain Picard. There's going to be a lot of fans who go in being like, well, I want to see TNG again. You know,
people
not like me who feel that. That could be a bad thing, who feel like very much like, oh, I want those TNG adventures again. I like that he said right up front, that's not what you're going to be getting, but it will have that similar sense of optimism and hope.
And I'll just say this to some fans out there. I mean, Ira Stephen Baer was asked the question. He was a head writer at Deep Space Nine. Would you ever do a DS9 movie? And he said, yeah, sure. But guys, we did 170 episodes. That's a lot. There's a lot of that content out there for fans to already enjoy, you know? So that's why, I mean, I know fans want to see a bit of a TNG redux or something, but I don't need to. Like, I that's not something I am particularly interested in seeing.
Mm-hmm. And I like to think that CBS isn't really that interested in that, because, I mean, they could have easily just jumped on a Captain Worf show right out of the gate.
Yeah, they could have.
And they didn't. And I give them points for that. So far, we don't know what they're going to add to, because they want to expand the Star Trek line. Who knows? Maybe we do see Captain Worf, but so far, they haven't jumped on that, and that would have been far more easy to market right out of the gate than Discovery was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
guys, beyond the Picard news, let's talk about some of our big highlights from Star Trek Las Vegas. Cam, I'll throw it to you because you had a really amazing encounter with one of the actors from Star Trek Discovery. Take it away.
Well, this kind of started on the podcast where when we were in the first couple episodes, I guess it was maybe Context is for Kings.
Yep.
I had expressed admiration for the character of Landry and how I was a big fan, and Tyler dubbed me a Fandry, which became a kind of a comedic hashtag between the two of us and some of our other friends. And I'm sure, Scott, you were aware of this.
Oh, very aware. I never stopped hearing about it.
Right. And so when, you know, Landry was coming back in the Mirror Universe version, I had friends, like, texting me and making fun of me, and the hashtag Fandry thing was getting thrown around.
You were texting us.
Yeah. Cam was giddy. Yeah.
And so when I heard Rekha Sharma was coming to Star Trek Las Vegas, I bought a photo op immediately, like literally within probably half an hour of her being announced.
Do you know what number on the tickets? Because for those who aren't familiar, you get numbers on the tickets that indicate what order you bought the photo op for.
Right. I believe I was number 5 or 6. It was, really
so
low numbers.
You're the number 5 Fandry then.
Sure, okay. Sure. But I was like, okay, that's not enough. I got to make this payoff for all that podcast buildup. So I had a t-shirt made with a photo of her, and below in big font it said, hashtag Fandry. And so I went to my photo op, and I was nervous, guys.
Oh, I could tell.
Especially when the woman who was kind of the volunteer who was overseeing the line called me out in a crowd and is like, did you make that shirt just for this photo op? And I didn't even say anything. I just kind of went, like, nodded my head and tried to fade into the background because everyone had just turned and looked at me. But I got up. She saw the shirt and just, like, lit up and ran over and hugged me. And she was like, I can't believe, did you make that for me or whatever? And I said, well, I know, Vancouver represent, because I should say the actress is from Vancouver. And we fist bumped and whatever. And she asked where I lived. And I said, I, you know, grew up in Upper Lynn Valley. And she lived actually very close to me growing up, about like 10 minutes away, basically. So, you know, we just kind of bonded over that. And it was the best possible experience I could ever have hoped for. And, you know, later a friend of ours was trying to convince me to go to her autograph line and get her to sign the photo. And I said, no, I can't. Because if I go up there, whatever happens at the autograph will not be as good as that photo opportunity.
I think that was very smart on your part.
Ken. Yes.
So do you think that's one of your best fan encounters, period, at a Star Trek convention?
I think it might be the best.
Yeah.
Because everyone, I think, who goes to these photo lines, you're kind of hoping for some kind of moment with the star. And most of the time, you're not going to get it. I did like 10 photo ops this weekend, and none of the others were that memorable. I mean, you know, they were pleasant. No one was a jerk to me or in any way, shape, or form. But it's kind of like, hey, how are you? Goodbye. You know, yeah. Sort of thing.
Yeah.
And definitely this one was kind of that moment you kind of hope for.
Well, I mean, like, we do get, you know, a lot of encounters with the stars here. I mean, like,
sure.
in the hallways, you know, you'll say, hey, I love you, Max Grodinchek, or Von Armstrong, great to see you up on stage performing, you know, songs for the fans.
Sure.
But, like, having, like, a real kind of connection, interaction, seeing, like, an actor is, like, really excited about your devotion.
Right,
you
yeah.
know? I mean, and you guys are able to connect over just where you grew up.
Right.
So, I mean, that's very exciting.
I think it also helps that this is her first Star Trek convention.
Sure, yes.
I mean, if I had caught her on her 15th.
Yeah, she would have, and you're still trying to get her to sign your photo? I mean, that's still awkward.
Yeah,
You had 14 preceding autographs on that one photo already, and she's like, enough, right. Kid, enough.
Right, so don't let the Landry on the TV show fool you. Rekha Sharma is just so cheerful and fun in real life.
So, Scott, what is, like, a highlight for you coming out of this convention?
Well, I mean, sort of tailing on to Cam there with the Discovery cast, we had a whole day of, well, 2 to 3 days, really, of Discovery cast members. And this is their first big year, really, apart from a special appearance last year. We saw Jason Isaacs all the way through to Sonequa Martin-Green. They all had some good time on the stage. I had photo ops with far too many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it hurt your Federation credits to a certain point?
I have none left. That's why I'm busking.
Yes.
Who did you get photos with?
This year I had photos with... I'll go from the top, and then I had Sonequa Martin-Green, who was fantastic. I had a hug and a nice little chat. Not as much as
right.
as Landry, of course. I also had a photo up with Wilson Cruz and Anthony Rapp with yourself, Cam.
Right.
And then I also have one with Mary Wiseman, where we posed as Charlie's Angels, and she was very much up for the laugh with that one, and they came out great. So I had then 2 photo ops with Kayla and Joanna, the sort of Con Helmsman officers from Discovery as well. They were both great, and that's sort of my interaction with it. But they had lots of panels as well,
yeah,
and some news coming out of those. I don't know if you guys heard some of the news coming
out
of
that. Yeah, what was the big news, Scott? You can reveal it.
Well, the biggest news, I felt, was that Kenneth Mitchell will be returning.
For those who don't know.
He plays Cole in Discovery. He was killed around about episode
6.
Was it 6? It was a mid-season finale, I believe. So he's coming back in some form. We don't know whether it's the same character or another character.
Well, do you think he could just be one of those actors that comes back as, like, a different alien every season? He's just one of those go-to, you know, actors that they like having on the show. They know what he can do. They know that he's devoted to it.
Like Von Armstrong.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's kind of like, why not?
Yeah, we did an episode, actually, on character actors like Jeffrey Combs. I'll post a link to that in our show notes.
There we go. And the other big news coming out of it from the Discovery side of things was the launch of the DVD and Blu-ray for Season 1, which, for those who don't know, listen to the podcast, comes out on November 13th, and you can pre-order it now.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I was surprised. I mean, nobody asked if Rainn Wilson was going to return, although we do know that he's doing that short trek.
Right.
He's also directing, like, this webisode, I suppose it
yeah.
is. I have to assume he's coming back for season two. It would seem weird
to, you know, Rainn Wilson's pretty high stature.
Yeah.
It would seem weird to be like, we just need you for like a 10-minute web short.
Yes. So, and then we also had somebody ask, hey, Jason Isaacs, are you going to return for season two? And I believe he said, I can't, there's something wrong with your mic. Person repeated the question and said, sir, I can't hear anything, and then he just walked away.
Right.
He was being very facetious about it, so read into that as you will. I think you can pretty much expect one prime Lorca in season two of Discovery.
And can we all agree Jason Isaacs was the MVP of the Discovery cast on stage?
I was incredibly impressed by him. Like, he does the Harry Potter stuff, right, because he's a Lucius Malfoy from that franchise. I think he knows what to do.
Right.
He went up on stage for, what, 30 minutes straight just talking, had wonderful stories, and then I think he finally realized there's somebody clued in him that there's, like, tons of people lined up to ask Q&A. Honestly, I think what we got out of him up on stage was probably better than anything that was thrown at him Q&A-wise.
He was talking about the movie Soldier, which is amazing, from 1998.
Yeah, with Kurt Russell, yeah. A sci-fi movie. So, and he talked a lot about, say, Event Horizon. So he knew his audience with regards to the sci-fi.
He barely even mentioned Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's people going up and asking about Harry Potter. I think the interesting thing that he did reveal, though, is just kind of the talks about the Lorca character as it was developing, why he decided to go on the show. And it kind of... Okay, so it confirmed a couple things. You know, yes, obviously there was a lot of turnover with regards to who was behind the scenes. We all know that Brian Fuller, the co-creator of the show, he ended up departing. Jason Isaacs said every time he got on a Skype call, there's different producers on the other side. That was interesting. And he also said it was never clear to him what the character's motivation was. And that was something that I've been complaining a lot about after the big Lorca Mirror Universe reveal.
Right.
And it was somewhat affirming to me that it's not just me who had a big problem with this. It was Jason Isaacs that was also very unsure about what to do with this character. And so to speak, in that the writer specifically said, well, we're not sure if you're going to this universe because you want to take over and invade the Prime Universe, or if you're just stuck and you're trying to get back to the Mirror Universe. They didn't really know.
Right.
And I think that actually comes across quite a bit when you view the character of Lorca through, you know, the first 13 episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
Well, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of talk about Discovery, obviously, this weekend, and it was interesting because I still don't feel like I have a good handle on how well-versed the fans at the Star Trek Las Vegas experience really are.
I don't think they are well-versed. Like, yeah. It's very unfortunate. Like, you could kind of tell that Discovery is not nearly as popular as maybe you and I thought it would have been this year.
Right, yeah. But, you know, Rainn Wilson was on stage, and someone asked him about how much input he had on this new Harry Mudd, because in the past, Star Trek was very, you know, writer-focused, where the writers made the calls, and the actors were just, you know, had to follow kind of word for word. And Rainn Wilson was kind of like, huh, well, no, I actually had a lot of input on this Harry Mudd, which then leads me to believe, like, how nailed down was Harry Mudd before Rainn Wilson was involved?
Yeah, exactly.
And we even had Rod Roddenberry and Trevor Roth had a panel as well where they were talking about Roddenberry Entertainment, and someone just asked them about what their jobs were on Star Trek Discovery, because they are executive producers, you know, so I think a lot of fans see the name Roddenberry,
yeah,
regardless of whose first name is on there, and say, well, he must have a fair amount of input on what the final product of Discovery was. But, you know, it really seemed like, you know, from what Trevor Roth said, that, you know, it's more of like they give their kind of seal of approval, give suggestions, and, you know, aren't exactly hands-on on a day-to-day business.
I don't even know, because I have to be honest, I mean, they kind of skirted the question.
Yeah, and they did.
So that just tells me, I think it's a very limited role that they have.
Yes.
So, which is interesting. The other, like, kind of stupid behind-the-scenes thing that I was interested in is somebody asked Jason Isaacs, you know, what's the deal with your credit on the show? It says, and Jason Isaacs.
Right.
And he had a great story about how agents always just consider whether or not they get a big trailer for their clients to be a win or not. So he says, I just leave it to the agents. The only thing I cared about was that I got to be on the show. I don't care whatsoever where my name lands in the credits. It is Sinequa Martin Green's show. That's all I care about there. So
yeah.
Yeah, I thought the Discovery stuff was a lot of fun. I mean, Cam, what else popped out to you from, say, this convention?
What I really always appreciate is how the showrunners, and I don't mean like, I mean the show headliners, I should say, the stars of the show, bring a certain vibe with the conventions. Like, if you're the lead on a Star Trek show, I think there's higher expectations on your presence at these conventions. You know, you look at, I'm sure we're going to talk about some of these people, but like Shatner and Mulgrew, Avery Brooks, they're all very, very distinct personalities. Scott Bakula is a great one, too. You know, and when they take the stage, there is a certain amount of expectation that they are going to be like a more important panel than maybe the other actors. Whether that's true or not, you know, is up to the person attending the panel. But, you know, it was interesting to see Sonequa Martin-Green kind of come into her own on stage and give a real vibe as to what we're going to sort of see on stage in the years to come, where she really does have this very, like, loving and very open-hearted approach to the fans. You know, she's not like a kind of the cut-up or the like the jokester, maybe like a Shatner is on stage. There's much more of like an inspirational vibe and a sense of like that we are a Star Trek family and it's very important.
But it's interesting because every single cast member that went up before she did,
they
all talked about what a great influence she was on the rest of the cast, saying like she's organizing games nights, she wants there to be a lot of camaraderie, she wants the set to be kind of like a place that people want to be. And I think that really shows through with like these cast members seem to like being on this show, whereas there's other shows where, with regards to Star Trek, where you can tell it's a bit of a job for them, as opposed to like a passion that they have.
She seems like a very old soul to me, because I think her and I are about the same age, and I mean, you put me up on that stage, no one's bowing down to me.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, well, there was proof of that. But Scott, what did you think of Sonequa Martin-Green?
I mean, I felt she was very sort of warm and open and loving, and you could hear the admiration from the rest of the cast as the weekend progressed, because she was pretty much the last of the group of Discovery to go on.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone else just spoke so highly about her that by the time she came to stage, you were like, I understand why. She is just the loveliest person. And you can tell that she's taken what she's learned from shows like The Walking Dead and dealing with the cast there onto this show and made it a family.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really feel that. And that's I think that's why I had such a good time with a photo op with her.
Well, you know, you talked about how, I guess, the lead actor has such a big influence on not only, you know, the show, but also the convention. Can I just say this? William Shatner, he's either on or he's off when he's at these conventions.
Yeah. And we've talked in the past on the podcast about panels where he was off.
Yes. And I have to say, he was on fire this year. I think this has to be my favorite Shatner convention appearance, at least that I've seen. But he was just, like, on point with all the questions that he was taking. I think he was being very earnest with it. He was, like, Cam, you pointed out, his comedic timing, he was reading the room, going far. Like, I remember last year, as somebody asked him about Kirk getting with women.
Right.
And Shatner started making fun of the guy. Like, what's your problem? Can't get, like, women? Somebody asked a very similar question. He's just like, oh, all the ladies, they wanted me, and it's all great. Did you, you liked Kirk? You liked learning how to pick up women? And, like, it wasn't creepy. It was funny.
Yeah.
And, like, he actually was able to really, just capture the audience in a way that, sometimes you go to these Shatner panels and people are kind of looking around the room. He's talking about horses like
pixels.
And you're like, huh. I have to say, he had a story about fermented cod that was fantastically, like, engaging. Even just stories about him, you know, commandeering a Bombardier aircraft for a documentary shoot. Like, I was so appreciative. I'll throw this to you guys. Do you think part of it was that he knew that Patrick Stewart was backstage and about to make a big announcement with regards to future content for CBS?
It's entirely possible he wanted to leave his mark on the crowd.
Or the executive producers over at CBS?
Well,
you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, Shatner very often is the headliner on a Saturday. And, you know, it's usually like kind of the day is structured around him to a certain degree. Yeah, you're right. He was on stage, and right after him, they're announcing Captain Picard. He also had people from Discovery on stage that day, kind of like, the new blood kind of coming in. Maybe he was just showing that, hey, you know, I still own these Star Trek conventions. And, I mean, he was a total blast. I absolutely loved that, you know, that whole bit. You know, I don't know if we sold enough, just his whole running gag with this fan asking about Kirk's ability to woo the women and how he just completely milked the humor and knew how to basically keep punching up the joke to the point where, like, everyone was, like, almost had tears coming out of their eyes. He had it, like, built up so big.
And I think all of our listeners know that we're both, you know, progressive people, co-hosts on the show, but he had a slip of tongue when it came to the Me Too movement.
Right.
And instead of it sounding like really awful, I can't capture the atmosphere in the room, but he ended up calling it by accident the Why Me movement.
Right.
And it was like it could have been like a super awkward moment, but like he went with it. He made it his own. He made it funny. You could kind of say, oh, you know, well, a guy, you know, slips up every once in a while when he gets up there in the years. Yeah. And I think Shatner is totally sincere when he was talking about how much he supports this movement.
Right.
We haven't heard any Shatner stories, you know, like coming out with regards to this movement either. So
I think what's great about this moment, though, is that it felt like it wasn't talking down to anyone in the room. It was more like William Shatner recognizing the absurdity of the question.
Yes.
Like, he was very much playing up how ridiculous this ongoing, you know, question of William Shatner as the ultimate ladies' man is.
Yes.
Like, he was saying, it's all fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. So
I don't know. The Shatner panel, that was definitely one of my highlights. I'll throw it back to you, Cam. Is there another highlight that you have here?
Yeah, I want to talk about Kate Mulgrew while we're talking about captains. To me, I think Kate Mulgrew is on par with Shatner pretty close. When I go to her panels, I mean, she's, I think, more consistent than he is, because we've seen some wonky ones from Shatner. But to me, Mulgrew is just maybe the best public speaker in any of the Star Trek cast.
She's just very engaging in her storytelling, and I think a lot of it is her kind of flexing her muscles to a certain degree with regards to like her novels that she is very dedicated to. So I think that those storytelling skills, like Cam, she was sitting there talking about like Russian accents and working with a dialect coach, which could be kind of dry to some people, but the way that she was doing this, it was so engaging.
Right, yeah. And I like that she's very staunchly, you know, feminist, and she has very strong messages for the women in the audience. And you can tell how much she means to some of the girls in the audience who step up to the mic. And it's really inspirational to hear some of them talk to her.
But she also brought up the Me Too movement as well.
She definitely did.
And it wasn't quite what I think maybe a lot of women in the audience were hoping to hear, though.
Right.
And, like, she seemed to actually be putting, I guess, more of the weight of it on women and saying that, I don't want to, you know, misinterpret what she was saying, but she was saying that more women should be pushing back against a lot of the sexual harassment.
Right.
My personal opinion is a lot of men should just not be sexually harassing women.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know? Yeah.
So I just don't, and she was also talking about how Jordan Peterson is now her favorite person to listen to,
right?
Which I think a lot of other women would have great problems with as well. So I don't know. Look, she's any captain you have, they're going to be a character.
Oh yeah.
So these are very distinct character traits coming from one Mulgrew that maybe as a feminist icon you wouldn't necessarily expect coming from her.
Right, and I don't know that she takes into account that Kate Mulgrew is a force of nature personality, mm-hmm. who I think would be intimidating to people.
Sure.
And not every woman is.
Yeah. What did you think about the Mulgrew panel this year versus maybe some of the previous years, Scott?
I think this one was a bit more emotional, I would say. There were a lot of questions about how Janeway has helped certain people that are asking the questions. There was a lot of women went up and asked questions, which isn't usually the case sometimes. It's some more male-focused questions sometimes. One thing I did notice is, and you could draw a lot of parallels, is between Kate Mulgrew and Sonequa.
Expand on that to a certain degree. Because like they are like leading women on a Star Trek series?
Well, there is that. That's the obvious link. But I think
I'm really slow. That's why.
I'm sorry.
I only do the obvious links.
He's just realized it.
Yeah. I never even thought about it before.
It's been a long convention. It's understandable. No, it's more towards, you know, the female empowerment side of things. Yeah. You know, a lot of the questions that were fielded towards both Kate Mulgrew and Sonequa Martin-Green were about how they've changed other people's lives and touched other people's lives and made people feel more confident in themselves.
Yeah, woman went up to the mic and said to SMG that you've inspired me to mute me against my bosses. Yeah. So there you go.
That's it, rebel. There we go.
Well, why don't we get on to maybe Tyler, another highlight.
You know, this is just a personal highlight. I'll go through it very quickly because it has very limited interest to pretty much anyone listening. But I did do a Star Trek Discovery trivia contest, went up against there's three different rounds against a whole bunch of different fans. I was able to win the rounds, and I came in first place at the largest Star Trek convention in the world at a Star Trek Discovery trivia contest. I got this huge bag of prizes. The other thing that was great is they would have actors from Discovery, such as Sam Bartholomew. He was Ensign Connor and Captain Connor in the Mirror Universe. He got to ask me like a bonus question. I also had one, Joanne and Kayla from the Discovery, the con and ops officers. They were also asking me bonus questions, and I was hamming it up when those two actresses were on stage. I was like, guys, fellow Canadian here, how's it going? And as I pulled prizes out of this bag, they asked me to do that. It wasn't just because I'm a greedy little person who had to like rip open this bag of prizes, but there was like Mirror Universe comics, and I held it up to the actresses like, you two were killing it in the Mirror Universe as well. They seem flattered. So it was really cool to just like be like right up there with the actors and just kind of like see like them in person. Sam makes me feel very, very old now being next to this guy and realizing he's like maybe a decade younger than me. And
right.
I don't feel as if I'm that old, but standing next to him, I sure did.
It's like Picard standing next to Riker.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that for me, I was so excited. It's like, hey, whatever, Patrick Stewart, I don't care. I'm getting free stuff. That's
right.
Pretty much my position there. I know. Anything else stick out for you, Scott?
I mean, the other thing I think I'd be remiss not to mention is they were celebrating 25 years of Deep Space Nine this year.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And there was lots of activities and different panels throughout the weekend. One of them was they had a celebration of Far Beyond the Stars, where they had a screening of the episode, and then they had a cast panel at the end, and then a mixer afterwards as well, if you could buy the tickets for that. So it was nice they had a lot of focus on what's come before as well as what's happening now. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, you know, there's also talk about the DS9 documentary that mm-hmm. has been in the works. I think Iris Stephen Bear said it has been going on since 2012.
Right.
Which is interesting. So they're saying that hopefully the people that contributed to the Indiegogo campaign will get an early stream of it by the end of the year. So you and I are looking forward to doing that on the podcast, Cam.
Definitely.
I did go up and ask a question during the Q&A, and I was talking to them specifically about the writer's room. And I just wanted to know how much time will be dedicated to this really cool thing that they did for the documentary, in which they gathered a bunch of writers from Deep Space Nine and broke a story for a hypothetical season 8 premiere. And so they said, well, it's going to be 18 to 20 minutes on the documentary, but we really want to release even more of it to fans. And they asked for a show of hands to see who would be interested in watching all 6 hours of it. So that seems pretty cool to me.
You know, Scott, you bring up that Far Beyond the Stars panel, and this was DS9's 25th. There's kind of two questions I want to delve into here with regards to this sort of coverage that the convention did this year. Number one, you know, this was the 25th for DS9. How do you think they handled it being the 25th anniversary of Deep Space Nine?
I mean, I don't want to criticize creation at any time, but they did hire a lot of the actors very late in the game when it comes to people coming to the convention. So you wonder whether they could have got their schedules lined up a bit better, because obviously Cole Meany was there on the Wednesday and he wasn't there on the Sunday for the panel.
Right.
Things like that. That could have been taken care of, I think. But I think they did a good job overall of highlighting 25 years of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good celebration.
Yeah.
And I always like hearing, I guess, just different insights from the actors, even just with how they approach an episode like Far Beyond the Stars, which, I mean, it's showcasing, I guess, racism in the United States in the 1950s. And look, there's a lot of questions about how it still seems very relevant nowadays. And that's kind of what I like having in Star Trek, and is just reemphasizing how it always seems applicable to what's going on, just how you interpret it based on what's going on in society. So, I don't know. It just makes me appreciate Deep Space Nine all the more.
The one thing to me that it felt like, though, was that DS9 really got overshadowed this year by Discovery.
Sure.
You had so much Discovery presence. There was a lot more focus on the Discovery stars. And I don't think it helps that, as much as I love Deep Space Nine and I love the actors, and I've never had a negative experience with any of the DS9 actors that I can think of at the moment, they aren't the most, like, energetic, fun group on stage.
Yeah, I mean, they're very insightful.
Very insightful.
Very dedicated. I mean, there's a great panel featuring Renee Bergeron, LeVar Burton, as well as Robert Duncan McNeil, talking all about the craft of directing.
Right.
When actors make that transition into directing. Renee Bergeron is incredibly, he seems like the sweetest guy in the world.
Yeah.
And he's incredibly insightful, but he's not like a
crowd pleaser,
like an Ethan Phillips who's just or a John Billingsley who's just going wild up on stage.
Right, exactly. Or a Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis, for example. Yeah. The other question I had, you know, creation is
speaking
kind of
which, during the Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis panel, Jonathan Frakes was sitting, what, like three seats away from us in our row.
Oh, that's right.
He commandeered some seats in our row just so he could troll Marina with a microphone
from
our row.
Yeah.
That's another very surreal moment
that
for
us. That was also, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, but sorry, what are you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, Creation has been playing around with the format of the way they do these kind of panels the last couple of years. We had a Zindi panel a couple of years ago, I think, where they talked about the Zindi arc.
Yep.
This year we saw something different where they, as you said, Far Beyond the Stars, they first screened the episode, and then they had an hour-long panel afterwards talking about it. They also did, curiously, a TNG-focused attempt at this sort of format with a screening of The Outrageous Okona episode from season two of Next Generation, followed by a panel with Brent Spiner and Joe Piscopo talking about that episode. How did you think this new format worked of an episode screening and then a talk afterwards?
I think it's actually really engaging, and I think they really should be doing more of this because, look, you're going to have a lot of fans going up wanting to just watch Star Trek in a communal atmosphere. I think it's a great thing to do if, like, you're sitting in the audience and there's just, like, this energy within it, even if you're getting a laugh here or a laugh there.
Yeah.
And experiencing it with fellow fans in a way that, like, how often do you get to sit with a couple thousand fans and watch something that we all are so devoted to? I mean, I thought that was great. What is your take on this format, Scott?
I think it's a good idea in the sense of using up the time that we have over 5 days of a convention. And I think also as well, it might inspire better questions from the crowd if your memory is refreshed by the
sure.
episode.
Yeah.
A little thing like that, but it does go a long way.
Yeah, I thought the Okona one was in a way more successful just due to the fact it only had Spiner and Piscopo on stage. So they could get more questions in, whereas the Far Beyond the Stars, there was like 10 of them on stage.
Mm. It had to be kind of a rapid-fire sort of 40-minute panel.
Yeah. You
know, make sure everybody gets at least one question and then let it go from there.
It was kind of like, tell me about your character. Tell me about your character.
Yeah.
Tell me about your character. You know, that sort of thing. But, I mean, I still like the idea.
Yeah, I wonder if in future years at the convention, if they want to pursue this, they maybe... I think it depends on the episode, because
yeah.
Outrageous Okona, like, I understand why they would have this episode screened, but it's not a fan favorite.
Right.
And Far Beyond the Stars, again, I understand why they want this one screened, but it's a really heavy episode, and
yeah.
I wonder if the convention atmosphere is geared more towards something even, like, a serious episode, like, say, Darmok, like,
sure.
that could work, or even mm-hmm. something lighter. If they're going to do DS9, what about Trials and Tribulations? Just...
Yeah.
Not because Far Beyond isn't a very important episode of Star Trek, but just with these big conventions, I think something lighter might work just a little bit better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. We should also talk, normally I don't know that this would pop up on my list of, you know, my top three favorite things, but we should talk about the Saturday night concert, because this year was kind of a special circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, every year they put on a big concert on the Saturday night. It can be things like Star Trek stars singing, like, Broadway songs. I think that's what it was last year.
Well, sorry. Before you do that, I do want to explain the Piscopo reference
at the very
beginning of the episode. He's, of course, in the Outrageous Okona. Piscopo is doing his best Jerry Lewis.
Right.
And so for the rest of the week, Cam, Scott, and I have been going around saying, ladies.
Right.
Not to actually, like, women here at the convention. Just,
no, mostly just to each other.
Just
yeah.
to three
in
of
our
us.
Hotel room.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's how mature we are. But I
right.
Just wanted to explain to anybody who's very confused by
your
my
opening.
Introduction.
Yeah, yeah.
But sorry. Yes, why don't we go back?
So, yeah. So this year we had the Nevada Pops coming to perform the concert, doing an orchestral look at the history of Star Trek music. And they've done this many years. So this wasn't a new idea to us. It was like, okay, this is going to be my third or fourth time seeing this. But we go down, and the show didn't really start on time, and there was actually, like, a medical emergency where the tuba player for the orchestra collapsed and was wheeled out, and we didn't really have a good sense as to how serious it was
yeah.
at all. We went in and all sat down. I think the show started, like, 15 or 20 minutes late, and we were just told, you know, the Adam Malin came out from Creation, just said, look, you know, guys, the show has to go on, so we're going to go ahead. And, I mean, the orchestra put on an amazing concert. They had special guests like Michael Giacchino, who did, of course, the Kelvinverse movies. We had Jeff Russo, who did the theme for Discovery and the music on that show.
Dennis McCarthy
as well.
The most prolific Star Trek musical supervisor out there.
Yeah, and we should say that, you know, Jeff Russo, kind of at the end of the concert, brought the house down with an original series theme with a soprano singer. Like, it was an amazing concert. And, you know, we were told that, you know, this tuba player named Danny, we were told by the conductor, the main conductor of the Nevada Pops, that, you know, let's all send out good vibes and hope for a speedy recovery. Well, we found out the next morning, that he'd passed away that evening. Like, he had not recovered at all from, you know, this collapse. And so it was just a very, like, sad note to kind of wake up to, but it really did emphasize just the professionalism and the dedication to the Nevada Pops. I mean, my hat's off to them.
Yeah, and I think they actually pulled up, like, probably my favorite performance that they've ever done
yeah.
since coming to the convention. And I think, you know, their thoughts were with their comrade there. And
we've been with them for 10 years.
Yeah, and I think, look, they were honoring him, and I think it was a great way to honor them.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about what you and I did here at the convention, Cam, which, of course, we presented our panel on storytelling in Star Trek, the evolution of storytelling, I should say, and we got a lot of great response from people that, you know, would come up to us at the convention and talk
came
about...
up to you.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, nobody would... I think Cam is just too dashing that maybe they're intimidated by him, but...
Sure. Or the opposite.
But, yeah, so it was just great to hear from people. I think we'll keep pitching these ideas to the convention organizers as long as they'll let us go up there and talk about this. But, I mean, it's always great to just, you know, spend 40 minutes up on stage and just express how much we really are dedicated to Star Trek. So that was a highlight for me.
And, Scott, I have to assume that was the highlight of your week, too.
I mean, it was the only panel I went to, really. I just... lived and breathed for it. I mean, I waited for bated breath the whole time. I've got your autographs now. My life is complete. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. So I think we always like to cap off these Vegas recaps with, you know, maybe our favorite merchandise purchase. Mm. You know, why don't I start with you, Scott? Is there anything that pops out, you know, in front of you that was a great purchase that you made? Or a favorite purchase?
A couple of things. I bought a t-shirt that I thought would fit me, and it turned out to be a skin-tight t-shirt that I now will keep for the rest of my life that celebrates Star Trek V, which I wore in one of my photo ops, along with Cam next to me here.
Yes, we both wore these skin-tight black Star Trek V shirts, and the Star Trek V is like sparkly silver. Mm. These are shirts from 1989, literally.
But fresh in a package.
Fresh in a package, yeah.
So they're a little gaudy, but you guys pulled it off.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Tyler?
Yeah, you know what? I definitely like the fact that there's a table selling socks and underwear for like $5. Two pairs of socks for $5. Three pairs of underpants for $5. Guys, I not that you ever wanted to know about my socks and underwear collection, but it's just filled with nothing but Star Trek at this point. Like, I cleaned up there. They also had, like, some Star Trek Discovery $5 shirts that I bought, one of. That was a great purchase. And finally, I got my Cadet Killy, or I should say Cadet Tilly badge from one of the booths. It was $15. It was from QMX. I got one last year with regards to just the command insignia for Star Trek Discovery. Loved it so much, I went ahead and got the Tilly one, because I think it's the most distinct looking one within that entire set. So and now I found out that QMAX, they actually have plans for the Mirror Universe insignia. So I walked around with my last year's purchase from Discovery. I put it upside down and pretended I was from the Mirror Universe for a couple hours that day.
It's funny, you say it was one of the more distinctive ones, and yet when we talked to the vendor, they said that the black badges were the top sellers at the convention this year.
Yeah, the Section 31 badges that will be making an appearance, I suppose, in Season 2. We got a little bit of a deleted scene or extra bonus scene after Season 1 concluded, and it displayed the black badges once again, and I guess it confirmed that that denotes Section 31. So a lot of people like the Section 31 badges. Apparently, those are the biggest sellers.
Although they were part silver, which was odd.
Yeah, because I, in my recollection from the episode, could be wrong, but I remember them being completely black. But the QMX badges, they were mostly black, and then the shorter leg was silver.
Right.
So, I don't know. Cam, any big merch purchases that you liked?
Yeah, I mean, I bought a $3 Kira Nerys yo-yo. Which I thought was really something. Actually, one of my favorite purchases was actually not one for me. My friend Mark and I grew up watching Seinfeld. We were obsessed with it. We knew every episode. We knew all the characters. We would always recite the comedic bits. And Phil Morris was here this weekend. He was taking part in a original series panel talking about his role as a child on the episode Miri, which is, of course, is one of Scott's favorite episodes of all time.
Oh, I can't stop talking about it, really.
And go on.
I actually can't remember the episode, so you're gonna have to go on.
You know, I went to him at his autograph table in the vendor's room and went up and got a photo of his character, Jackie Childs from Seinfeld, and asked him to make it out to my friend for it was his birthday. I actually got it on my friend's birthday, got it dated on his birthday, from one of his childhood icons, which, I mean, how often do you get that opportunity? And not only that, but he actually did the Jackie Childs voice to me, which was surreal. I had a lot of Star Trek, you know, celebrity encounters this weekend, but having Phil Morris do the Jackie Childs voice to me was absolutely bizarre and amazing, and I'll never forget it. As for, I guess, other purchases, I bought a really cool Star Trek III: The Search for Spock belt buckle that's like really heavy and very cool. And I managed to get a bit of a deal on it.
I was very impressed with that. Like, yeah. That thing has weight to it, so it'll be good for when you walk to work.
Sure. So, I'm just curious, you know, with, you know, Discovery stuff out of the way, like, what are you looking forward to next year's convention? Because it seems like every year creation is trying to top themselves, bring in things you haven't seen before.
Well, the theme this year was very much focused on the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder if they have more of a 1701 focus. I think, honestly, if creation wants to keep doing this, they're going to have a big emphasis on Discovery if they want the okay from CBS. So I anticipate even more, you know, Discovery-focused stuff next year, because there's not really a big anniversary in Star Trek, like a DS9 25th or a TNG 30th that we've had in the previous couple years.
Right.
So I have to believe it's going to be more Discovery-focused things going forward. We also know that the Blu-rays will be coming out, so maybe even more fans will be coming around next summer that are very familiar with the show. So, yeah, what about you, Scott? What are you hoping for? What do you think we might see next year?
I'd like more of the sort of sets and props that they put in. I mean, every year Creation tries to put something else in. This year we had the Agonizer booth from the Mirror Universe of Discovery, which you could take photo ops yourself or do paid photo ops in. I'd like to see more of that. Me and Cam did get a bit of a scoop of what might be coming next year.
Maybe. Take this with a grain of salt, but...
We heard from a potentially reliable source that we may be getting a replica of the Discovery shuttlecraft, which you could go in, it'll be on some platforms, it'll wobble whilst you're inside. I imagine you can get photo ops whilst you're in there as well.
Yeah, we'll see if that proves true, but yeah, a little birdie told us that one.
Mm.
And it was cool too, they, you know, last year they had sort of this small little museum area where you could go in and see, you know, the uniforms for Star Trek Discovery. This year they had a similar thing where it was all the Mirror Universe outfits as well as Georgiou's throne. So that was really cool to do a photo op in as well and just see, you know, all of these kind of pieces making up this new show. It's interesting because in the past, whenever we would attend these things, you're always seeing these things kind of well in the past. Props from an old show and what have you. It's interesting to go now and see these things that are happening just like a couple months ago. I found that very cool. But I am very curious to see what they do next year because... next year isn't a huge anniversary year for any of the series.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to do any sort of 10-year celebration for the Kelvinverse, the first Kelvinverse film. Not because they don't want to. I think it's just because, you know, it doesn't seem like Paramount and, you know, the filmmakers behind the Kelvinverse have a big interest in showing up at these conventions.
No. I mean, Simon Pegg has shown up in previous years, Carl Urban as well. But, yeah, Paramount and... you know, the convention organizers, not a lot of synergy like, say, we saw with CBS and Creation.
So. Right, no, exactly. Before we sign out, let's jump over to some of the other people who attended the convention and hear some of their highlights.
Hey, this is Tyler Orton with my dear friend, Jesse Oquendo. Jesse, we are here at the Star Trek Las Vegas 2018 convention, and I just want to hear from you. What are... you know, some of your highlights here at the convention. Sum it up.
The biggest highlight was Patrick Stewart saying he's coming back.
What do you think of the idea of Patrick Stewart coming back to Star Trek? I mean, obviously, it's a highlight for you. What are you excited to see of a return of one Jean-Luc Picard?
I'm excited to see more Star Trek on TV, so it's not necessarily...
You're not watching Star Trek Discovery right now, is that it?
I am watching Star Trek Discovery when it's on. I'm just saying it's more variations of Star Trek. Like, I know people didn't like it, but I loved when Voyager and Deep Space Nine were on at the same time because you could choose which one you wanted. So I'm just looking forward to seeing that happen again. Hopefully it'll come out that way.
So Patrick Stewart, obvious highlight. Is there anything, did you go to any other, I don't know, smaller events or, you know, like, were there any other panels that, like, jumped out to you? Of course, other than the subspace transmissions panel.
Well, I was going to say the subspicions transporter panel.
Subspicions transporter panel. Thank you, Jesse. But other than that, and look, we already talked about it on the podcast, so you don't need to talk about it anymore. But just tell us anything else that was kind of a cool thing that you got to experience here in Las Vegas.
No, I think the other great thing I enjoyed was seeing the Discovery cast grow in terms of the convention scene. So,
especially Saru, he's about 6'8".
Yeah, I don't think he grew since last year, Tyler. That's not how it works. But I will tell you that I really did enjoy them. More of them came in because
Ronald D. Moore?
More Discovery cast members came in than last year, and not all of them are dead by now. So that was exciting.
Thank you, Jesse. We'll leave it at that. I'm here with Kim McInnes, one of my dearest Canadian friends in the Star Trek universe. And Kim, we had an absolutely amazing Star Trek convention 2018 Las Vegas. I'm just curious, I mean, from your perspective, what were one of the biggest highlights that you experienced?
Skipping over, obviously, the Patrick Stewart announcement, Dr. Aaron McDonald. My new crush.
So tell me a little bit about that, because you and another friend of ours attended a lot of these like science-based sort of panels that were going on. What is the appeal and what did you take away from that?
Well, it was just awesome to have somebody who loved science so much, and she was all about the astrophysics, and she related everything back to Star Trek or Battlestar Galactica or anything. And she just super excited. If I'd seen her back way back in the day, I might have stayed in physics.
So I'll ask you this. I'm putting you on the spot. I do apologize for that. But is there like a specific, I don't know, science lesson you learned from this or something you didn't know before or just something that kind of became illuminated after going to one of these panels?
I can't remember specific ones. One that pops into my mind is when she was talking about gravity wells, but they reversed it because time was faster on the planet than up in space. And she said because they dropped a tachyon core, she's like, that totally works. Bam! Everything's explained.
Does this happen to be the Star Trek Voyager episode Blink of an Eye that maybe she was referring to?
That sounds familiar, yeah. I don't know them by name, so.
Excellent. Well, Kim, thank you so much. So I'm here with MJ McKenzie in Las Vegas, Star Trek 2018. So I'm curious, like, MJ, from your perspective, we're here, Star Trek Las Vegas 2018, who are oftentimes, like, kind of the actors that you've seen before that you always know that you want to go see again? Because they always bring it, they're always engaging, you always get maybe a good laugh, or at least, you know, you got a good insight out of it.
Shatner.
Yeah, you know what? We actually talked about this on the podcast, and we thought Shatner was absolutely on fire. What was Shatner doing this year that, I mean, really popped for you?
Well, he was talking about more things I'd never heard of. Like, I've seen him I don't know how many times. And usually it used to be he'd just tell you the same stories over and over and then talk about his horses. And this year he left out most of the parts about his horses and then just had really cool stories.
Well, I'm curious, from your perspective, I mean, I've been following Star Trek Discovery. Have you been watching Star Trek Discovery at all? I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm just curious because I think we went to a lot of panels and we're like, maybe Star Trek Discovery is not as popular amongst the hardcore fans as we thought it would be. Where do you fall here when it comes to this new series here on CBS All Access or in Canada, where you're from, Crave TV?
Well, I watched one episode and that's about it.
Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Okay, and you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Voyager Panel, also really good, Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T, T as in Trivia Nerd, O-N.
And if you're so inclined, you can find me at Tiberius Hardy, that's H-A-R-D-Y.
Okay, so until next year in Vegas, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.